Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Hutton O'Clock. Noon on a Wednesday, which means it is Hutton O'Clock. Caroline Willie D. Mace. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Joining us now is Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Hut, always appreciate your insight, and we had some breaking news this morning. Stephon Diggs being traded to the Houston Texans for a 2025 second, a 2025 fifth, and a 2024 sixth round pick. Your initial reaction to the move, what this means for the Texans, and what this means for the AFC South as a whole?
Well, the Texans just became the Detroit Lions of last offseason with all the hype, right? That's the first thing that comes to mind. Well, they're loading up, and the benefits of having the rookie contract for your quarterback. From the Buffalo side of things, think about where this team was when they didn't have the football in overtime against Kansas City, and they changed the overtime rule because of Allen and Mahomes, to where they are now. And in knowing that they gave Diggs the contract restructure, gave him more money a little over a year ago, and here they sit without him on the roster, with that being some of the underlying storyline of last year, even going into minicamp, where he was there, he wasn't there, they didn't really know, but then he was there the whole time, according to McDermott. The whole thing was strange. The rift between him and Allen, that they tried to smooth over but didn't really do that. This is Buffalo taking the cap hit all of this year because it'll be a post-June 1st official trade. And it's right in the middle of Josh Allen's prime. You know, they've paid the guy. Now they're down a couple of wide receivers, and they're down their best wide receiver, their best weapon. It's a totally different Buffalo team with McDermott already on the hot seat. Just read some of the articles going into last season for him. It's a crossroads moment for that franchise, where if you compare it to Kansas City, they trade Tyreek Hill, but it's who they gave contract extensions to prior to that and after that, and what they've done with it with Mahomes. Josh Allen, on the other hand, we haven't seen that bar raised. And this is another example of them saying, hey, we've got to move forward without our top receiver, and we're going to have to take the hit now. I don't see them as anywhere close to the team we thought they would be in 2024 when we saw this team play in January of 2022. It's very surprising and maybe even stunning how quickly that has unraveled up north.
Life comes at you fast in the National Football League.
And they're about to start selling PSLs for their new stadium too.
Great point. It's a great point. And hey, again, we could be sitting here with Buffalo having a new coach next year.
Yeah.
I don't like firing guys a year out, but I mean, that's another factor just to mention with Allen, a quarterback, one of the best quarterbacks in the league in his prime.
And we were looking at his cap number. You were mentioning, as we did in the first hour, when you've got that good quarterback on the first deal, it's time to make hay. And hopefully Levis gets to that point where he gets some momentum and you're like, we can win with this guy while he's cheap. But Allen now is on that second contract where you have to not only make the big money, but you got to elevate everybody else. His cap hit has got to be addressed in the next couple of years. It really balloons.
And the restructure, they can do that. You know, they can restructure, but what do they do around him now? Like, just compare it to what Houston's doing, Willie, where you have Dalton Schultz, you have now Diggs, you've got young pieces at receiver anyway that were stepping up this past season. Mixon's now joining the mix in the backfield. I mean, it's quite the offense. And then you also have the defensive rookie of the year coming back, of course, on defense, with a young defense and a defensive-minded head coach. I mean, it's a prime example of, if you hit on the quarterback, all the other pieces can come together fairly quickly because you can allocate funds the way you need to.
And I'm glad you bring that up, because I agree wholeheartedly. And I know that Titans fans look at this move and think, oh my gosh, great. Now we have to deal with Houston in the AFC. Now we have to deal with Houston and Jacksonville and potentially Indianapolis in the division. But could you also look at this from a Titans perspective with a little bit of encouragement, that in 2 years, Houston went from being the laughingstock of the league to now a Super Bowl contender?
Yeah, I mean, it's why you have to hit on your picks. I mean, they built this team really through the draft. I mean, we're viewing it through the lens of free agency right now, but it's why they can spend this money right now, Caroline, here in Nashville, and why they're tops in spending currently. It's because of the rookie contract situation. They took the hits along the way this past couple of years, but you're not spending upwards of $30 to $40 million at quarterback, right? Like that, you're able to move forward and allocate money. You could have done that at left tackle, just the free agent market wasn't there. You can do that at the prime positions, like cornerback, and wide receiver, and help out your rookie. But you've got to have that leader and the moxie at that position in order for everything to come into place. These other pieces are not going to reach the top level of expectation without Will Levis raising the bar this season going into year number two. That also is factored into whether or not Carthon made the right call. We'll judge all this in the upcoming season and years to come. But ultimately, it's whether or not they get the quarterback on the path towards greatness. He doesn't have to be a legendary quarterback in 2024-25, but he has to continue to progress. And that's why they made the hire they did. Everyone's touting what Callahan can do and what they've done in the past. More power to him. He's got the resume. But that's now task number one. You know, they've done and allocated what they could around the quarterback. Now it's about making the quarterback much better than what he was.
We'll talk with Jonathan Hutton discussing the NFL and the Tennessee Titans and their moves prior to the draft and during free agency, obviously. Jonathan, all of this, regardless of what Houston does or Indianapolis or Jacksonville, and we're just going to stay with the South here, AFC South, no matter what they do in regards to the players they bring in, guys that are no longer on their team, I think the one thing that is critical here for the Titans is the quarterback. I look at what Houston is doing, and they're doing some really good things, but it all works because of the quarterback.
Yeah, man.
If Will Levis progresses the way that I think they believe he can in that building, the Titans are not far away from, say, a Houston or a Jacksonville. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and Stroud has the benefit of sticking with an offense now. You know, his offensive mm-hmm. coordinator was mentioned and interviewed for jobs, head coaching jobs. It's a very similar situation to that of Ben Johnson in Detroit, really. I'm just comparing the hype. I mean, Stroud now comes back with the same coordinator, the same system, the same speaking the same language, right? This is a new setup for Levis, but by all accounts, when he's allowed to do it, he's been doing it with Callahan and doing some great things communication-wise with what they want to do. So, yeah, I mean, he's got to learn that. I mean, that's a detriment. Bryce Young's going through that again. I think by and large, we'll see that with Caleb Williams in Chicago, quite frankly. Again, just not trying to fire a guy a year out, but I think it's tough whenever you have a rookie, you invest in your quarterback, and then you switch coaches or offensive coordinators a year in, because this is supposed to be that big year of development. Levis can do that, though. And if they get him on the right track, and he's already on that path, I'm not saying he was awful. He's already on that path. But to get the most out of Will Levis, they've done what they can around him, and now they have an offensive-minded and pass-first coach that fits his style really the overall type of quarterback that fits the system, I think, that we'll see. So, yeah, let it fly. I love it. And it's, can he protect the football? Mm-hmm. Can he read the defense and make the – maybe not even instead of making all these great plays, keep you out of the bad play, right? And that comes with just understanding the offense and coverages. That's crucial. And that's about time invested this time of year with the coaches that are supposed to take you to the next level. We'll see. Not every quarterback can do it. Not every coach can do it. But we've seen these coaches work with the best, some of the best, and maybe they can get the best out of Levis. I certainly look at the right wide receiver core right now with Hopkins and with Ridley and think it's far better than what we expected this to be a year ago at this time. In the backfield, we'll see. But the type of offense they're going to run, and from what we saw him do in Kentucky in his best year, we certainly saw him in a down year too. Can they protect him? Can they find a crucial piece at tackle? Can they protect him with Bill Callahan now coaching that group? And can Levis elevate this offense to match what this defense is supposed to do now with the investment with Simmons up front and now in the secondary with the money on the outside with Wuzier and now with what we're seeing with L'Jarius Sneed? Yeah, they're saying they're not just rebuilding, which they are. They are not just going into a season, I think, kind of like what we're going to see with Buffalo, where they had to release some players due to cap and now trade a huge piece of their offense. The Titans have been spending because they have the money to do so, and they're looking to compete. That's what Amy Adams Strunk has said from day one.
Now, assuming that the Titans go out in the first round and they get a tackle, whether it's Alt, Fashanu, Lathan, one of those guys, but they go out and they – you know, solidify the left side of this line. Second round, obviously there are other needs that they have, but if there's a, you know, a Peyton Willis or a Cooper from Texas A&M, if that guy's out there in the second round, or because they need an inside backer, or if yes. there's the edge rusher, whether, you know, it's Braswell out of Alabama or Robinson out of Penn State, where do you think they go? If those two positions are there for them to get, because they have to address them, whether it be another edge rusher or inside backer, where do you think they go?
I would go edge rusher, mm-hmm. personally. I would continue to invest up front. I want to disrupt the quarterback, and I want to defend the pass. Corner is the toughest position right now to play in the league. You're on an island. You're supposed to be on an island. And the rules are stacked against you heavily. You're not supposed to win based on how these rules are set up. It heavily favors the offense. I would say in order to flip that in your favor, you've got to have your true number one corner, which they've got that in Sneed. And you have to disrupt the quarterback by getting the ball out fast, but you want to get him off the mark. That comes from the interior pass rush. Autry's a big loss. Interior pass rush now, because that's how you affect the quarterback off the spot. And then you have to win one-on-one on the edge in order to either get the sack or get the ball out fast and get the ball out to a player that maybe the offense didn't design or have as a first or second read. That's my mentality on how you win defensively. I view it as also, though, Mace, mm-hmm. go with your board. Trust your scouts, trust your player development and overall assessment of this class. And I also don't overlook offensive positions either right there. I there's a big drop off between Brock Bowers and the rest of the tight end group. I do think they need to address that position. And I also wouldn't overlook a possible stacking up again on the offensive line. I wouldn't. Because that is a crucial piece to everything they want to do and how they're going to compete moving forward. And I'm not necessarily sold on the entire group just as a reset. And we don't know. What we don't know is, how does Bill Callahan view what he's inherited? He'll have a big voice in all of this when it comes to those positions specifically. His voice in that room will carry a lot of weight. And if you're saying they're going tackle at seven overall, there's still positions that they need to acquire. And a young wide receiver also comes to mind.
I think you made a really interesting philosophical statement there, Hutt. And if you view this as a long-term project, as much as you can in the NFL, it's dangerous. You can't say, hey, guys, we got this five-year plan. This is going to be awesome.
You don't last that long.
You can't. As I said, that when the Browns were at the bottom, and they've been at the bottom a few times, but there was one time with – they were at the bottom. They brought in the guy from Moneyball to run things. And I was like, I told Floyd Reese, I said, Floyd, this is the way to go. This is coming into football now. Analytics, this guy's going to do great.
Did he laugh at you?
And I said, well, they were trading everybody they had for picks. So they were getting a fourth rounder over here, a second rounder. I was like, they got all these picks. This is going to be great. He goes, those guys will be fired in about 3 years. And I was like, but they got this great rebuilding plan. So like a three-year plan. You're fired. You're fired. You said you come in with that plan, you're going to get fired. You're not going to make it. They're going to write you off when it doesn't happen for a couple years. So it's dangerous. But I think you have a year to where you can say, look, we can't possibly find all of the players to fix all of the holes right now. So when you said the board, you got me up my attention when you said, trust the board. You might have a couple of situations where you're like, man, we really need an inside back or whatever, just to use the example you threw out there. But the better player on your board is something that isn't maybe as much of a need, but you're like, this guy is just way better. We need good players. I think maybe that's the way to go, is trust your board. Even you have to be prepared for them on the next day to say, well, why didn't you pick? You needed this. You didn't pick a single guy at this position. What were you thinking? But I think that might be the better way to build the roster and get to where you want to go.
I don't know why you're paying the staff and the entire scouting staff to do what they're doing if you don't trust the board. If you're just going to go position by position, just scout those positions only, right? Now, the joke would be the Titans should be scouting every position going into this offseason based on what they need.
They have a lot of needs.
They do.
They only have many picks.
But think about safety. They have Amani Hooker, but what they've done structurally is, if you look at these contracts, it kind of all matches up with a couple of things. Number one, it matches up with Will Levis's rookie deals and the fifth-year option and the extension. Most of them do. And it matches up with the stadium. Those are the two things that come to mind with these terms. Now, we've seen a lot of shorter-term deals, especially at corner this offseason. L'Jarius Sneed's getting a longer term than what most have done. This was via trade, but I'm saying in free agency. But think about from Amani Hooker's standpoint and the way they have him locked up, but the money allocated and whether or not they want to go young again at safety moving forward. Again, all of these things come to mind for me and how you structure your roster, not beyond this upcoming season. Now, if they're doing a true reset, and they are, they've done that. They've hit the reset button. How are you setting yourself up for success sooner rather than later? You trust the positions and the grades that you have on them, the importance of those positions for your overall team and your philosophy. And that's what you have to trust on that day and how the board falls to you, especially given the fact that right now you don't have that third. I absolutely am viewing the second round as not just need, but true value based on how you have these players graded. And I don't mind the fact that, that Willie, a great example, and they had a luxury this year. So I understand they had three picks in this round, but the draft of Derrick Henry,
right?
And they had DeMarco Murray. They had just traded for him and everyone's like, what are they doing? They had the luxury of having the extra picks, but that also worked to their favor. Although it took some time, but we view Derrick Henry like we view Eddie George now. That has to be in mind in the draft room. It would be for me. I'm trusting my staff that is doing this on an annual basis full time. If you're not doing it on that day, there's no need for it. You just go by all the mocks.
Last one from me, Hutton, quickly. Joe Alt is not there at 7. You're Rand Carthon. What do you do?
Joe Alt's not there at 7. A quarterback is, so I'm trading down.
Are you sold on Alt, though? If Alt is there at 7, it's Alt for you? Are you one of those guys? Because every mock draft is saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I told you guys, I would view going into it, I would have paid, and again, I said this flippantly without diving into the free agent value or the trade value for offensive tackle this offseason. This is a month or two ago. I would have gone in free agency off the just surface level at tackle with a veteran and then loaded up at wide receiver at 7. But the way this is all gone and what they've been able to do, I mean, I don't care how Bill Callahan views the offensive line. To be able to pair a young tackle with your young quarterback and then make sure that you – I mean, again, those contracts, if you hit on the first pick and they've got to – those contracts tend to match up, and you can elevate your roster around those picks. That's a massive value for a team that's going to be offensive-minded. So, yeah, I'm protecting Will Levis and making sure that he has everything around him, and it falls on him and the coaching staff instead of the detriment of talent around the quarterback that's really good. I'm leaning Alt if he's there. And if he's not there, you either go with the tackle that you love, a wide receiver, or you trade down. And again, if tackle goes before the Titans draft, Caroline, that means a quarterback has fallen, and that means one of these teams that's quarterback needy is going to pay a premium price, and that is a luxury for where the Titans are currently slotted to pick with the teams right behind them.
That means Minnesota is salivating, and Minnesota is running to pick up the phone.
Denver. I mean, there are a lot of quarterback teams. There are a lot of teams that could make a move. Denver could be one of them. So, or even again, so many different scenarios of trades, and there are more quarterbacks than maybe I thought there would be in the top 10. JJ McCarthy comes to mind. There will be a team or two that loves him and needs to move up because they view another team as also similar to them in their mindset. The Titans will have their phone will be buzzing. I don't think it is now. The week of the draft, it will be ringing off the hook for possible scenario setups, much like the scenarios that we saw with AJ Brown in that year with that trade.
Hutt, you're the best. We love you. We appreciate you. We'll chat with you next week, and thanks for your time, Hutt.
Love you guys, too, and have a great rest of the week. Always enjoy this.
All right, appreciate it. You too, Hutt. All right, we'll react to what Hutton had to say. But coming up next, Predators drop another one last night, 3-0 to the Boston Bruins. I don't think the final score is indicative of how that game went, how back and forth it was. Reasons for concern and reasons for optimism based off of what we saw last night in a Predators 3-0 loss to the Boston Bruins. We'll get into that coming up next. We'll get into your thoughts as well. And hey, if your bracket is not looking so good, trust me, you're not alone. But don't fret. We have one final chance for you to win some great prizes with the 1025 The Game 4-Team Bracket Challenge. Go to thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge and fill out your 4-team bracket to compete to win prizes, including tickets to see Creed at Ascend Amphitheater on August 13th. The 1025 The Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook, Twin Peaks, and Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. The Predators fall to the Boston Bruins 3-0 at home last night. In 5-on-5, I thought the Predators were great. You see, Saros was fantastic. The defense could have afforded to be a little bit better. But it was nothing for a majority of that game. And then all of a sudden, late in the third quarter, it's bang, bang, and then an empty netter, bang. And all of a sudden, it's 3-0, and the Boston Bruins take it. Your reaction to the game last night, Willie, and strangely enough, as tough as that loss was last night, as much as you would have wanted to see the Predators pick up 2 points to make things a little bit less uncomfortable, of course, for the game coming up with St. Louis on Thursday and for the rest of the season, at least 5-on-5, and special teams, we'll talk about that, but at least 5-on-5, I thought the Predators played great, and I thought UC Saros had a fantastic game.
I thought, to take it a step further, I thought 5-on-5 was toe-to-toe with one of the best teams in the league. And I think what we have to remember is when you play the best teams, and they're on a run now, you get a little spoiled, right? Because they, during that 18-game point streak, they were beating the best teams in the league. And on occasion, like that night where Cody Glass got the hat trick and they thumped Colorado, you're like, man, they just kicked one of the best teams in the league's butt. They just wax them. You're just not going to do that every night you play one of these elite teams. So I'm trying to keep that in perspective.
Yeah.
The Bruins are a tough defensive team. And I agree with you. Andrew Burnett made this point. He said as the first period, UC Saros had to be really sharp. The Bruins came at them and got some good chances. Saros was excellent, which was another positive out of last night. Saros bounces back from a bad start, looked every bit of an elite goalie. Then as the game wore on, I thought the Predators were the better team 5-on-5. And it's ironic that in the third period, when they drew the penalty with 7 minutes to go or 6 minutes to go, or maybe 8 minutes to go was when they drew the penalty, I thought, okay, they have outplayed the Bruins here. This is nothing. And I'm thinking the Bruins are the team that are going to hang on a little bit here to get it to overtime. Or maybe the Predators can break through and get that first goal. You kind of knew whoever gets that first goal is going to dictate things. This game could be a 1-0 game.
Right.
And instead, they gave up the shorthanded goal, which was, you know, that was a killer. I also thought the Predators' penalty kill was exceptional last night. That was a good sign after giving up three power play goals to Colorado on Saturday. So that was nice for that unit to bounce back after a bad game, too. So there were a lot of good things. And Andrew Brunette, I think, used the right term. He goes, sometimes in hockey, the hockey gods just aren't quite on your side. You're just not going to win every game. Now, unfortunately, this has happened three games in a row. So now the urgency meter goes up a little bit more. You've got a big challenge coming up Thursday night. But I would just say, bottle all of what you saw last night. You run that out there for the next seven games, you're going to get the results that you need.
Yeah, I'm not going to be, you know, I think it was a hard-fought game. I'm like you, Willie, and I know you were calling the game. I'm like, whoever gets his first goal, because it was just going back and forth, back and forth. Great defense on both sides. I mean, both goalies were getting pelted. I mean, there was a stretch there where, I mean, if anybody outside of UC Soros was in the net, I mean, the score could have easily have been, you know, in the first two periods, 3-0 or 4-0 before they actually even got to, you know, scoring three goals in a row, because they were putting so much pressure on UC Soros, but he stood up tall. And my thing was, just please get a goal. Just please get a goal. Because once you get that goal, I think you can breathe just a tad bit easy, because the game was so back and forth. And there were some mistakes made by the Predators. Once again, turnovers. And even on a power play, when they had advantage, they didn't have an advantage. It just wasn't me, Willie, but in watching the Predators this season, I don't think I've seen anybody put as much pressure on the Nashville Predators when they're in the power play.
Yeah.
Boston,
aggressive.
They were playing as if they had the extra man.
And they do have one of the best penalty killing units in the National Hockey.
But they were aggressive. Like, some teams kind of get on their heels and play, you know, defensive. They were almost, in a sense, playing offensive hockey, even though they were a man down. Mm-hmm. And maybe that confused the Predators. I don't know. But it seems like they were the guys that had the man advantage when the Predators were in a power play. Yep. And that I didn't like.
And the guy that made the play, Brad Marchand, one of the most hated guys in the league. He's not playing for your team. He's been doing that for years. He's always been a great penalty killer who creates offense off of that. So that was just a vintage play by him. And that's the difference in the game. I thought Andrew Brunette was pretty honest after the game. And he said, I thought we played fast in all areas except the power play, where we played slow. And he said it cost us the game. Mm-hmm. And There were a couple of shorthanded chances early in the game that Boston got, that Soros was able to make the great save to keep it 0-0. So that was the one area where the Bruins got the margin. The Bruins play a lot of close games. They play more overtime games than anybody in the league. They've gone to overtime 25 times. The Predators, I think, have only gone 12 times, just for comparison. So they're used to those games. They love it when it's 1-1 or nothing late. They feel like, oh, we'll figure it out. And if worst case, we lose in overtime, we still get a point. You know, they're masters at that. And the Predators, unfortunately, that's another game to put in the hopper of, there's probably 10 games this year where I thought the Predators played well enough to at least get the game to overtime, and they lose in regulation, right? And they've left some points on the table there. It's still, all in all, they've done a tremendous job, right, to be where they are. But it's a little frustrating. But we're comparing them with a team that was considered a Stanley Cup contender from day one of this season.
With the President's Trophy last season.
Yeah.
Now, was it anyone's fault on the first goal? The first goal that Cole scored? Is that how you pronounce his name? Cole? K-O-Y-L-E?
Coyle.
Whose fault? Because it seemed like maybe it was just a hustle thing. Maybe it was a hustle thing because, you know, one guy has the puck, and then it's almost like he created the fast break, but whoever was guarding Coyle didn't realize that, you know, maybe wasn't paying attention or didn't think he would get to the puck, because it just came out of nowhere. It was almost like they created the fast break right on the go.
I think it's a great question. Kara Hammer asked that to Andrew Brunette after the game, and he said, we got caught on the wrong side of the puck, which you're not supposed to have that happen on the power play. Yeah. In fact, they put two defensemen in there. Sometimes only one defenseman goes in on the power play. Mm-hmm. They put two in there to probably say, let's make sure we don't get caught with a forward back, because the forwards coming back are not as good at defending as a defenseman who was used to skating backwards, used to defending plays. And nonetheless, they got caught. I'd have to go back and look and have somebody who knows the game better than me break down exactly what happened. But the puck was in the corner. Mm-hmm. The Predators maybe got a little too aggressive trying to retrieve it. They had one guy back. The other guy that probably should be watching Coyle, just in case, he got caught. And maybe he anticipated Coyle was just going to skate off and go to the bench. And suddenly Coyle sprints up the ice and creates a two-on-one. Mm-hmm. And the Predators can't quite get back in time to defend it. And then Coyle finishes the play. If the pass was perfect, the shot was perfect, and boom, that's your game.
And you mentioned some of Andrew Burnett's comments post-game on the power play, because that was one of my biggest takeaways from this game, was how slow and lethargic the power play looked. I think you said it best, D-Maze, that when they had a man advantage, it didn't feel like they did, or at least they weren't playing like they had the advantage.
They weren't building momentum off. Exactly. One thing if you don't score, but Boston was gaining momentum, right? Boston was like, oh, we're killing this. You're not getting anything. And that's a big part of a game.
It should at least be a momentum factory. And it really, it was more of a momentum vacuum more than anything. But this was Andrew Burnett post-game on the power play.
On the power play, but not playing fast enough, has that basically been an all-year thing?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you work on that?
Well, I think we're trying to work on it. And I think it's been funny. I think we've had really good pace in big moments. The Vegas game and some of those games come to mind where we need a goal and we got some really good urgency. And there's games that we get slow for some reason. And it's been a constant discussion, move pieces in and out a little bit. It's just not flowing all that well right now. Been for a big chunk of the year.
And it has. It hasn't been great all year. And there have been flashes. There have been games where special teams absolutely have been an advantage for the Predators. And I think you can step away from that game and feel encouraged of how they looked 5-on-5. But if they have a power play night like they had last night where it really killed them, like, that could rear its ugly head in the playoffs as well. And in the playoffs, you don't get very many opportunities to have just, a tough night on the power play where it doesn't create momentum and you're not creating goals out of it. So it's one thing to look at the game last night and be encouraged for how they played, discouraged with the power play unit, but looking ahead to the playoffs, it's concerning if you have a night power play-wise like you had last night.
Yeah, I think so to a degree. It all depends on your perspective. Andrew Burnett's new. He runs the power play, right? He's the guy in charge of the power play. So he has high expectations for what it should be. I do think, and he said it, they have scored some big, clutch power play goals over the course of the year. Anybody who watched this team, and Andrew Burnett did not, right? Andrew Burnett did not watch last year's team. Last year's team could not get that clutch power play goal.
Yeah.
So this power play has gone way past what last year's power play was, right? So I feel good about that. They're still over 20% on the year. That's kind of if you're 20%, that's doable, right? That's okay. That's adequate. Even though you're shooting for something higher that can be more of a force, right? Where you're striking fear into the opposition. We're like, oh man. Just like when Edmonton or Colorado, one of those teams goes on the power play, you're like, uh-oh. We're in trouble. That is a mental thing, and it has you maybe playing more cautiously on defense because you don't want to take that penalty. If you are playing against a power play that you don't see as a threat, you're going to be aggressive on defense, and you're going to say, oh, if I get called for a hook here, no big deal. We'll just kill it off.
Right.
So I think that's where Andrew Burnett wants to see another gear. Barry Trotz has said that. He said it with Jared, I think, not just yesterday but the week before. Like, I'd just like to see a little higher level of power play. But the thing he said that caught my attention was, like, a little more urgency, zip, a little more pizzazz, move it quicker, play as fast as you do on the power play as you do at 5-on-5, and maybe you'll see better results.
And I'm glad that you brought up Barry, because Barry Trotz was on Stillman and Company yesterday. a message for all of the worry wart willies out there that were worry warding before the game last night, and I know are probably worry warding after the game last night, after the loss last night. What Barry Trotz had to say about that. Is Barry Trotz worried? We'll get into that coming up next. And hey, Preds fans, don't miss tonight's Smashville Live show at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs at 6 p.m. See your Predators star players up close and personal, plus get autographs and pictures. This week's Preds special guests are Spencer Stastny and Mark Jankowski. Smashville Live is brought to you by the Black Abbey Brewing Company and ESPN Bet Sportsbook. Caroline Willie D. Mays, hey, score big this spring with Lee Company and the Nashville Predators in the 10K Power Play giveaway. Enter for a chance to win a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. That's right, a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. Go online to leecompany.com/giveaway to enter. That's leecompany.com/giveaway and the 10K Power Play giveaway. Contest entries are accepted until Saturday, April 20th. Lee Company, all you need. So I know that we have all been Predators fans, all of us, we've been spoiled. We were spoiled, rather, on the 18-game point streak. Predators were beating Stanley Cup contenders, and honestly, they kind of made it look easy. And winning became a habit. Now all of a sudden you lose three in a row, and it feels like the world is crashing in. And it sets up for a really interesting and important matchup with St. Louis on Thursday. So I know that there is a faction of the Predators fan base. Not all Preds fans, but there is a portion of the Preds fan base that is freaking out and panicking and ready to hammer that panic button with the Predators. What if they don't make the playoffs? What if they lose to St. Louis? All of these doomsday possibilities are running through Preds fans' minds. And for all the worry wart willies out there, not just our worry wart willie, Barry Trotz was asked about that yesterday with Jared on Stillman and Company. Is Barry Trotz worried? This was Barry.
Are you worried?
No, I don't think you're worried. I think I've seen this, you know, throughout my years in the game that you go on a big run like that. It takes a lot of, you know, focus. It takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of commitment. All those buzzwords you hear all the time, and then it usually ends when you least expect it and with a thud. Mm-hmm. It just does, and it feels like it. You know, you don't see it coming, but it does get you, and then. It usually is I always call it a grieving moment, because it is something ends that was very positive, and then you've sort of got to crawl out of that. And I thought our 5-on-5 game in Colorado was really, I thought, pretty good against a very good team in a very difficult arena to win hockey games at that altitude all the time. So I thought we were really in a good place, and then obviously a couple things happened. Obviously, you know, we took a penalty. Unfortunately, it was a 5-minute, and they capitalized on that, and then score a late goal, which we saw early in the year a lot.
Yep.
And we just couldn't get, you know, past that for the most part, and then they get an empty net goal. So, for me, there was lots of good stuff on the 5-on-5, but the special teams and some unfortunate things that being a 5-minute major and really a late goal in a period for momentum. I think you get through that third period tied up, you have a good chance to get some points out of that. So,
all right, again, that was Barry Trotz on Stillman & Company yesterday. Now, I don't think that Barry's going to get up on the radio and say, oh, yeah, I am terrified. I lose sleep at night. I am sweating. I am so nervous. But I also don't think that Barry's lying through his teeth there. And I have to say that I agree that, look, you go on a run like that, you're going to lose some toward the end of the season. Just continue to play your game. Play the best that you can. You're going to pick up a couple of points here and there. You'd like things to not be unnecessarily interesting or uncomfortable. But you heard it from the horse's mouth. Barry Trotz is not worried.
Yeah, I think it's time, really, to hit the reset button going into this game on Thursday. This is maybe how I mentally go through the process here, because everybody's got their own process, whether you are driven by getting worried or driven by just staying confident no matter what, or trying to stay even keeled, as hard as that might be. But Barry Trotz talked about a lot of things that maybe during the streak weren't happening, that all of a sudden these last three games, they got burned a couple of times. So their flaws showed up. He mentioned giving up the late goal in the period that Yakov Trenin, the huge goal in the game in Colorado. And he said that, you know, that was happening to us early in the season, or when we struggled, that happened a couple of times. Now all of a sudden, that wasn't happening at all during the streak. Then all of a sudden it does. You know, the power play has a dip. You give up some. These guys, they're not perfect, right? It's not a perfect team by any stretch. They're human. But what I would say is, okay, let's hit the reset button. This is Coach Willie, and this is my speech to the team if I'm Coach Willie today. Going into this game Thursday, you can let all the pressure and the worry, you've lost three in a row, oh my gosh, what happens if the Blues win, all of this stuff, and you can build a lot of anxiety. You can have a lot of worrywart Willie in there. So Coach Willie's talking to worrywart Willie. If you told me with seven games to go in the season, before the season started, right, with no expectations, what's this team, I don't know. If you told me they would have 90 points with seven games left and be in the position they are, you'd snap it up in a heartbeat, mm-hmm. right? You'd snap it up. It's like, man, sign me up. Sign me up. So I think that's the reset. And Luke Shen said it. He goes, a little adversity at this point probably isn't the worst thing because we were sailing along. Everything was falling into place, and you get happy. And then it ends with a thud, as you heard Barry say, and you got to kind of gear yourself up. You got to harden yourself back up. And they still have time to do that. But, look, we all would have been amazed mm-hmm. if in a crystal ball before the season started, like, this team is going to have 90 points. They're going to be in wild card one position with seven games left. We would have said, "I'm that's incredible."
Sign me up for that.
I wouldn't have seen that coming.
Yeah, sign me up, considering where we thought this team probably would be at this juncture of the season. And many predicted them not to be a playoff team. So if you tell me, hey, 90 points, you're in the first wild card position, sign up for it. But what Barry said, I think reigns true. Whether it's an NHL season, an NBA season, or NFL season, MLB season. When you go on these long runs and they're successful, it does take a toll on you because each and every night you got to come in. And for, you know, a sport like hockey, it's even more than that because it's every other night. You got to get back ramped up again after a travel, come home, go to another place, but you got to find that energy to play at the level or exceed that level the next game. And for 18 games or for a month and a half, they found it. And then all of a sudden, they hit this thud, boom. Now, like Willie said and the GM said, listen, we got to reset now. We got to regroup ourselves because we can go on another run here. We just got to reset and get everything back in order. Because I think that last night's game, even though it was a loss, it showed that after getting beat the way they did against Colorado, they can come back and regroup. That was a hard-fought game yesterday. But for 2.5 periods, it was like you could say Nashville had the advantage at times and then Boston had the advantage at times. I don't think it was a situation where Boston came in and just dominated them. If you looked at the score, you would think that. But if you actually watched the game, you would think – you were like, the score is not indicative of how that game went.
Yeah, I think maybe the silver lining also can be they're not going to be able to just coast into the playoffs, which, you know, if St. Louis had the wheels fall off, to their credit, they're 8-2-1. When there have been times where everybody's saying, Blues, I just don't think they're good enough. They're not good enough. The Blues have kept themselves in this thing because they have played really well over the last few weeks. It's not like they added a bunch at the deadline. You know, they just kind of stood pat, and they're like, we're kind of playing the long game here. We've got some salary cap stuff. But they're staying in the race, to their credit. And that is forcing the Predators to earn their way in. They're going to have to keep pushing. They got to keep getting some success to get in. That might bode well if they do cross the finish line and get into the playoffs, rather than if for 2 weeks you're in and you're just looking around going, it doesn't really matter if we win or lose. You can lose that edge.
Yeah.
Right now they're going to have to keep playing with that edge and overcome this little bump in the road. That might help them in the playoffs.
I think they're going to have to play tomorrow with an edge of our season is on the line.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it's not necessarily, like, mathematically it's not on the line. Like, if you lose this game tomorrow against St. Louis, absolutely it makes things more interesting. But it's not like you drop out of the playoffs. But the reason why I say that is because, one, if you do win this game, it does feel like you pretty much all but put away St. Louis. And the second reason why I say that is because St. Louis is going to be playing like their season is on the line, because it does kind of feel
like
it is.
No question. You're going to get their absolute best tomorrow.
You are absolutely going to get their best. You have to give them your best, too. All right, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.